Welcome to another exciting episode of the Business of Digital podcast, featuring your host, Matt Siltala and Dave Rohr. All right, really looking forward to today's episode, and we have a special guest, Simon Hesteltine, with us. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you.
And did I say that right?
No. Well, it's close enough.
Okay. I wasn't gonna say it right anyway, but you know, as someone with a last name that no one ever gets right, you know, I feel your pain. So All right. Well, we also have Dave Rohr over there. Welcome, Dave.
We have the three, now I won't say toughest names, but yeah. The three often mispronounced names going on today.
I'm gonna say, you know, we don't have Dennis.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't even try to say Dennis's last name.
Not even going to try. So, well, I do, unless you guys can top me on this one before we jump into it. I actually think I take the winner for the worst way that someone has ever said my name. They actually pronounced it syphilis. I'm not kidding you. One time I got called syphilis.
You win.
Yeah, you win.
Okay. I don't know that that's something that I'm excited to be, you know, win about, but all right. So what we wanted to talk about today, obviously, Simon, you have a strong background in reputation management, and there was an article that you wrote in the past, and it's still super relevant today. And what Dave and I were talking about wanting to jump in with you is how your brand can reduce the risk of reputation nightmares. And so just to give everyone an idea, the article that we're referring to is on Search Engine Watch. And you could probably just do a search for Simon and find it in there, or we'll drop a link to it. That'll make it very easy for you on this blog post. But welcome, Simon. And you know, what are your first thoughts in jumping into this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been speaking on reputation management for actually probably about 11 years now. It was the first topic I spoke on back in late 2007. And
oh, really? The first topic ever of any?
Yeah, cool. I spoke on it at a conference in New York and then the next day in D.C. And it's something that always fascinates me, because it's, in a lot of cases, it's just common sense. And it's people are lacking that level of common sense. And it happens to everyone from time to time. But for some people, it happens more frequently than others. And the presentation that I do, I mean, I've kind of had this presentation really refined now for about the last 3 or 4 years. And I've been presenting it. And every time I present it, it's all new case studies, because it just continues and continues on.
Because people keep screwing up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have the situation this week with Starbucks. You know, that's something that happened in the store. But by heck, did that become a big issue online?
Yeah, that's horrible.
And that's the thing about a lot of these. You know, it's something that happens offline. In today's day and age. Yeah.
You know what? It makes me wonder, Simon, how much of this kind of stuff happened before it could be broadcast all of social media. And it's just because sometimes this stuff just seems so alarming to us. But I bet we'd be surprised at how much a lot of this stuff goes on. And or did go on before, and it's just because of the age of social media that we're all finally hearing about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you a Britishism now. It used to be that people would say, "Today's news is tomorrow's chip paper," because you know that would be it. You know, you'd read it today, you'd be upset about it today, and then tomorrow you'd forget about it and you'd be on to the next topic. Now it's there. It resides. It sits there online. And this, you know, this even gets us into the whole right to be forgotten issue. There's a big law case, a big case on that this week in the UK, where a guy wanted his criminal conviction taken down from Google, and Google had said no, it's in the public interest to see that, and the judge ruled against Google.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see that they ruled against Google.
They did, because basically what they said was, this happened a long time ago. The guy has reformed, and he's now in a completely different industry. So from a relevance perspective, It's not.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess it's kind of like taking the same approach of if you served your time, you know what I mean? Like, you know, if you were given 7 years and you did your 7 years and your record was clean.
But then
now,
you get into the other aspect of it, you know. Yes, you've done your time for the crime that you did, But would you like to know 5 years later that your accountant was done for, you know, tax evasion?
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, especially with, I mean, you could many, many different scenarios. It's, the one that came to mind was, yeah, you'd like to know the child sex offender that moved into you. You know, he may have done his time or whatever, but I mean, that's stuff absolutely, that you always absolutely. Want to know. So.
But, you know, to get back to the whole common sense thing, I mean, it is just so amazing. You know, anybody, you know, whenever I do this presentation, whenever I talk about this, one of the first things I do is I go to Twitter and I search for "I hate my job," and the number of people who are writing about how they hate their job, it's soul sucking, it's awful, and these are open Twitter accounts. You know, you have friends who follow you, you have coworkers that follow you, you may have your boss that follows you, and you're posting pictures of yourself. Yeah. It's not hard for them to find this. And it just gets into that whole common sense aspect of it. And every day you see people posting things like that.
So speaking of that whole common sense part of it, like it leads me to, I wanted to ask you about having some sort of a social media policy. Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think businesses need to do that? How would they go about that? Like,
well,
how would
they even begin something like that? One is the actual training for the employees to let them know what they can and shouldn't say. And I forget who it was. I don't know whether it was Microsoft or Yahoo, but back in the day, one of them had the social policy for their employees: don't do stupid stuff. And that was it. That was it. And that made absolute sense, you know. And everyone, especially, you know, in polarized times like we are now, there are a lot of different topics that people get excited about, that people get upset about, they get energized about. And, you know, we've all seen this on Facebook, on Twitter and so forth, where people, you know, they jump and say things that, you know, they wouldn't say in person to somebody. They go over the edge. They invoke Godwin's law. And you know, these things are a challenge, and that's when you get to that other side of it. I mean, is that common sense bit where you need to stop people doing things? But it's going to happen in some cases anyway, or you're going to upset that customer in some way, and they're going to go on and start complaining about you. Then you have to have that other aspect of the social training where you're talking to your team about how to handle conflict, about how to handle disgruntled customers, about what the escalation policy is, about how they should respond. And that's something else that really needs to be defined, that really needs to be out there for your entire team to understand. Because if they don't, you're going to see these situations happen. You know, you've got that proactive part and you've got that reactive part.
Very good. All right. Any thoughts on that, Dave?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the places I've worked in the past. There hasn't been a lot, but you know, even as an employer, I also look at that stuff. So even if, you know, as an employee, if they're doing stuff, they're only hurting themselves. So if you want to try to sell it to them, and they've, as a way to get people to on board, say, all right, let's say you found this perfect job that you're now going to leave the company, you know, say my company, and you start, you know, they start looking at your social media stuff. Cause if it's open, it's really easy to do. I've always done it. You know, you just search for their name, you find their LinkedIn, you start going like, oh, what's this MySpace account? Oh, what's this Twitter account? Oh, what's this Facebook? What's open and what are they openly sharing? And it's always, if it's always, I hate my job sucks, or I can't stand my boss.
Well, I'll get you, give you one here, Dave, as
yeah,
well.
Maybe you're not a good
in the presentation I have, I have a tweet from the coach of the Auburn Tigers, Herb Hand. And the tweet is, dropped another prospect this morning due to his social media presence. Actually, glad I got to see the real person before we offered him.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
And yeah, and
yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Now, do you think there's ever going to be any? I just want to follow up on that really quick. Do you think that there's any kind of backlash that the coach could get, or any kind of I don't know, is there any, I don't want to say legal issues or any backlash that could come to him because he.
I mean, it's possible that could happen, but I mean,
is there any
you are starting to see in some places now, and I even have a screenshot of this for my presentation, where on application forms, they will say to you, is there any adverse information that you're aware of referring you that might come up in an internet search? If yes, please detail it. You know, they are looking for this. They want to know what's out there. They want to know what's going on with you.
Interesting.
And yes, I mean, he could have had some lashback if it was, you know, he was doing it based on some esoteric issue. But if it was based on something where, you know, that person was really doing something that they shouldn't be doing, saying things they shouldn't be saying, whether misogynistic, racist, or whatever, then I think that that's, you know, a fairly valid thing to do.
Right. Well, it also gets me thinking about how even, and again, I don't want us to get all too political in talking, but it almost gets me thinking about how the government talking about coming into the States, and I don't know exactly all the details of it. You probably have read up and know about it more, Simon, but just with access to it. What's up with that?
I think has been a big impact on people coming into this country. I mean, I would think so. Cause I mean, if you think about the fact that you're now giving them access to
really,
you know, everything on your phone, everything on your computer, that's very intrusive. You know, I'm a citizen, so I don't have to deal with that. But I could see that being a big issue for people.
Interesting. All right. Well, that kind of leads me on to so like, for example, because a lot of the listeners that we have and a lot of the people that are on this show, Simon, are people that are maybe one or two person shops at the most. And so what would be some of your best recommendations for a person to be able to, first of all, you know, whether it be, you know, the tools that they need to be able to handle this,
well, or from monitoring the monitoring side,
any suggestions
about. You want to make sure that the tools that you're going to use fit what you're trying to do. You want to have your goals in place. You want to have your strategy in place. And you want to actually be able to act on any data that comes back from those tools. It's no good paying for an expensive monitoring tool that you don't have the time to actually look at the responses from and respond to. You know, at the company I was recently with, we worked with a white labeled reputation monitoring solution. And that tool would be going out and, you know, looking at any time there was any kind of mention on any of the social media networks for different property management companies. And our team would then go back and they would respond to every positive, every negative, every neutral comment. You know, it makes sense to respond to the positive ones. You know, I mean, Yelp, you know, part of their ranking is based on, you know, how active your actual profile is. So if you're, you know, people are posting good things about you, why not go back and say, yeah, we're listening. Thanks for that comment.
Yeah, I like that.
I was going to say, it's funny how often there's one of the little places I go to around the street, down the street. He responds to everything, good and bad. If you really like something, say, oh, glad, you know, oh, this, you know, we added it, you know, to the menu recently. Glad you like it. You know, it's going to be there for a while. It could be something like that. And just to respond and let them know that you're listening.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to talk about, Dave, and also just share this with Simon, because I've shared this before, but I don't know if you've heard it or not. But when I first moved back to Arizona, this area, I went and I checked out a barbecue spot. And this is back when I was heavy using Yelp. This was probably back in like 2007 or 2008. And anyway, I left an unfavorable Yelp review about this barbecue spot, and it was totally legit. Like it wasn't good. Like it was maybe it was an off day. I've heard from everyone how awesome this place was, but for me, it was like horrible. And so I just wrote my review. Well, I get a message in the Yelp system, you know, hey, I'm really sorry that you had this experience. Click this, fill this out or whatever, and I'm going to give you a $40 gift certificate to come back and try it again. And I apologize that you went through that experience. And never once did he say, hey, you know, how dare you, you know, say that kind of stuff, or, hey, if I give you money, will you change your review? Or, you know, he didn't say any of that. I thought, and what I found out is that it was actually the owner of the company. And I thought that he handled that spot on, you know, like, I mean, obviously I'm not saying that you have to give $40 to everybody that, you know, that doesn't like your food or service or whatever it might be. But in that case, like, I thought he handled that well, because he didn't ask for me to change my review, which would have been bad for him if he did. And, you know, he just was like, I apologize, here, try again on me. And, you know, he owned up to it. I thought that was and I've used that case a lot, and I've gone back to him since, and I've actually had really good experiences with him since. So,
unlike, I just was really looking it up. Unlike that one company in Scottsdale that where they would just go on Twitter and Facebook and Yelp and yell at people.
Yep.
Well, yeah, like you guys remembered it. I had to look it up.
I was going
to
say, I mean, that's the basic tenets is, you know, openness, honesty, transparency. And
anyway, what were you going to say, Simon?
If somebody is complaining, if somebody is upset with your service, you know, talk to them. Find out if it's legitimate. And if it is, find out a way to fix it. And that doesn't all have to happen online. You know, take them offline. Give them your phone number. Take it to private messages. You know, we all know Sean McGuinness. When he was working at Sears, he would occasionally go onto Twitter, see somebody complaining about Sears. He'd give them his phone number and say, give me a call.
Yeah.
And he talked to them about what the issue was and helped them with it. I mean, that wasn't his job. But, you know, it gave him the ability to, you know, kind of find out what was going on. And it helped him, you know, it helped the company with those particular customers. And it's been a while since I've seen the stats, but it's something ridiculous about how if you can turn somebody from a hater of your company into a lover of your company, they spend a lot more money than just a regular customer of your company. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading a stat like that. It was crazy, like 90% more money. I can't remember the exact stat, but I remember reading that, what you're talking about. Yeah, that was crazy. It caught me off guard, too. Very interesting. So, some final thoughts here, I guess what I'd like to just kind of ask you, Simon, is you know, what are your thoughts or recommendations of, you know, who to give access to? Like, let's say that, you know, I'm thinking about us with Avalanche. Okay, we have 40 plus employees. We have probably five or six of us that have access to, you know, all the social media accounts, and no one person really designated to run it. Like, should there, you know, am I doing it wrong? Should there be better?
I mean, that's the basic question.
Have access?
I mean,
what are your thoughts on that?
There's no one answer. I mean, you know,
yeah, it is.
We've all been at different conferences. We've all seen presentations where somebody says the best time to post a tweet is at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon. And everything depends on your industry. It depends on your customer base. It depends on you. It depends on how often you put posts out there. one thing I would say that, you know, you need to make sure, and I'm sure, you know, knowing you, Matt, I know you've already got things like this in place. Make sure you have consistency. Make sure there is a brand voice. Make sure you have, you know, folks talking in the same manner. And when you do have different folks that are actually engaging with individual customers,
right,
you know, have them throw their initials on the end of the tweet so they know that's that one person.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Yeah, of course I've seen people do that, like presidents and stuff like that or whatever, but or politicians, but I never thought about it for that side of it. I like that. You know, one of the things that impressed me the other day, we get a lot of inquiries on Facebook. You know how there's like that hidden inbox or the hidden email or the other mail or whatever. I saw something pop up, and we actually had one of our employees jump in and hit him right away and ended up landing a big web design deal because of it. And, you know, normally that's something that I don't pay attention to. And so, you know, it caught me, you know, the importance, if you will, of making sure that you're monitoring all your channels all the time for stuff like
that. That's the thing. I mean, you know, you've got all these different channels,
but
And if you're a one or two person shop,
you
maybe can't handle everything. You can't be doing Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram and you know whatever else is out there. But you do want to make sure you've got those namespaces so that somebody else can't jump in and pretend to be you. So you've got that set aside, and you want to make sure that you know where you can, you're monitoring, you're looking at it. I'm going to give you an example of. I mean, this is a few years ago now. We're talking like 2007, 2008. I was working with a military university. So the primary people who went to this university were in the military. And, you know, they were trying to reach out. You know, we need to reach out to people on Facebook. So we did some research and we looked at where their customers were. Their actual customers were enlisted men. And enlisted men were not on Facebook because at that time you had to have a college account to be on Facebook. So they were all on MySpace. So, you know, back then, what we did was we really pushed them onto MySpace and we made sure they had a MySpace strategy, that they were there, and they were pulling folks there. And then we found these forums that were education enthusiasts and forums where people were talking about, you know, different colleges, different educational opportunities that they had. And we were able to, you know, get some folks in there who were advocates for the university. So, you know, the university itself didn't even have to be there, you know, talking to folks when there was an issue. We already had advocates there. Yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of different things you can do.
Yeah. Well, I like that, Simon, because it kind of reminds me in wrapping things up here. Mm. Yeah, whatever the platform being, you know, we talked about Facebook but it ended up being MySpace or whatever. Like, you know, right now, one of the things that I think people are paying more attention to is Glassdoor. You know, and if anybody's there listening haven't heard of Glassdoor, go check it out. See what people are saying about your business. It might surprise you. And so, again, whether doesn't matter the platform. The point here, what we're all saying. Is monitor it, figure out how to best utilize it, and use it as, you know, because a lot of times people try to hide this stuff, Simon. They try to, you know, pretend that they don't have problems or this or that. I'm always saying, I'm always encouraging, listen to what they're saying because this can help us figure out if we
want to do an SEO audit, I just put the name of the company into Google. Number five was about their layoffs from 2 years before. Number eight was about a plant explosion they had 4 years ago. And if you're thinking about doing business with them, you know, you read that and you think, oh, maybe they've got money problems. They're laying people off. Oh, their plant exploded. What's their safety facilities like? You know.
Oops.
So if you're not monitoring, if you're not looking, it's still going to be out there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey,
the one thing I was going to say is when I was in-house, I had to answer people on Yelp and I had to do all that stuff. And I was the point person. But one of our writers who was always on brand, I would actually send, if I had a big response, I would either send it to the communications director or I would send it to him, who was like the secondary person for that kind of stuff. As far as the Twitter and managing social, I was, again, the point person. But I had it so that at least the director of communications or that one writer person had access to it so that if I was on vacation, someone could respond and knew some of the logins and could get to things. And the other thing I would do is on our Twitter account, I stalked HR anyone that ever worked for our company and I knew they had Twitter accounts. And I created a private list on Twitter and I would drop them into there so that I could... So I could follow them, and every so often I would just look in there, like if once a week, you know, that's really all I did is, you know, we had 200, 250 employees. I think about 30 or 40 of them had accounts at the very most at that time. And, you know, most of them were on the marketing team, but every so often I would just take a look and see what they were saying.
Yeah.
And then if I really needed to, I'd walk over and say, hey, you know, you say our company name in your profile, and then you were posting this stuff. And they were like, oh, yeah. And then suddenly it was gone. And, you know, so-and-so never did that again. And I didn't bring in, I didn't escalate to even, HR. Yeah, I didn't do that. I just walked over and said, hey,
my account's protected.
You know, you're killing me,
Smalls. The public can't see it.
And they were like, just bear in mind, I'm sorry.
Your friends are your friends. The ones who are actually following you on Twitter and can see it, they're going to be sharing it with somebody. They'll take a screenshot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they will. Not to say, and they will. Yeah. But the, one last point I do want to put out there that you've both touched on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Is about access to accounts. Make sure there is a centralized last thought, Simon? For the social media accounts. Because if something happens, you know, that proverbial hit by a bus, the way you get your password back from Facebook or Twitter is a lot of wishing and prayer or spending a lot of money on the paid side, then they'll sometimes help you.
Oh, man, that's a good point. Yeah. Gotcha. Nice. Nice tip. Well, thank you, Simon, so much for joining us. And this has been great. This has been an awesome podcast. So I appreciate all the information that has been shared with us. So for Simon and Dave, I'm Matt, and we're signing off on this episode. Thanks, guys, for joining in. Bye.